You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 217, Thursday, June 17th, and we are back in action after a vacation week last week, but it's good to be back, and we got a fun show ahead. Buy, sell, or hold on a handful of hitters, a handful of pitchers. Going to be looking at hot starts, guys who are on, cold starts, and then hot stretches in recent days for both hitters and pitchers. Going to be a great show. I feel like this is kind of the earliest time of the year, Steve, where I find it a risk of switching off. And maybe that's because, you know, I'm a huge soccer guy as well. The World Cup gets exciting. I had a vacation in there. The New York Knicks. There's a lot of noise, right? So, I also have theories that the waiver wire is especially freezing cold. Other than prospect youngsters, maybe it's just me, but this show will be great because I feel like a lot of these guys are either disappointments from the start of the season with signs of life, or some other guys that maybe we've had our eye on for a long time, but there's been one reason or another to kind of jump ship or not trust it. So it'll be great to break down a lot of these names that you find yourself kind of going back and forth on. So very excited to get into it, man. I know it's been a while, but great to be back. How's it going over there?
Yeah, it's good. A lot going on. I know by you too, there's World Cup games not too far. There is one pretty much in my backyard, with how close I am to MetLife Stadium, and then the Knicks too. Yeah, so it's been an interesting time. Did miss you last week though, but good to be back. This topic, it's a reminder of like how long the season is. Yeah, like there is an opportunity to sort of fade away from the detail and just the it's not like July, August where it's true dog days of summers, but it's, you know, there's the Stanley Cup finals, NBA, like World Cup now, like there's a lot of different things coming on. Football is an all year round thing. Like people start to focus their attention. This is the point where people can start to miss some of the narratives that happen. And most of all for me, like this episode is a reminder of how long the season is and how much can change even from now till the end of the year. I know we kind of have done the last few weeks like a focus on sort of trade shows or things like that, and I think this is still an addition to that. And I think that there are some interesting names that there's some actionable paths to take, right? Like guys are frustrated on certain teams. Guys have been dropped at this point. Like it's well beyond, you know, Memorial Day, the sort of de facto, you know, wait till you see where you are in the standings in Memorial Day. Wait till you see how a guy's doing on Memorial Day. People get impatient, and some of these guys might be on wire still, especially on the underperforming side. So excited to break it down, and think we got some good names to talk about here.
Yeah, like you said, the it's kind of the benchmark of how long the season is, because in the modern analyst world, kind of the quickest, easiest thing, and we spend all offseason looking at it, is like first half and second half splits. Like we're still in the tail end of the first half. Yeah. Like we haven't even gotten there, and the amount of times we look at second half is like night and day splits. And there's every offseason 50-100 examples where you're like, oh, he had a major second half, he was so disappointing in the first half. So we're still right in the heart of that. So I think, like you listed out here, Steve, like George Springer in 2025, Sandy Alcantara has been one for splits. I know, you know, one of the famous ones was like Jose Ramirez when he had that ice cold first half and then just went nuclear. Kyle Tucker is not on this rundown. He probably could be because he's spent a whole career having drastic like first half, second half splits. So yeah, I think it's fantastic topic. We can go off script too if we want, because you can do this exercise and buy, sell, hold with almost any player. It's hard to build the rundown, but the way I was kind of approaching it was just names that have been catching my attention lately for one reason or another. And there's a handful that aren't even on here, like Tyler Soderstrom. I feel like the Athletics in general have been heating up, and we've got one in this bunch. But to jump right in, unless you were going to add something on the rundown.
No, Steve, I was going to add off. Like, these are the things in season that we miss, or you know, these splits and these breakdowns of how halves go that we miss in the off season when we're analyzing. And maybe that's why it's more fun in a way to analyze in the off season. It's easier to look at the whole picture. You miss the narratives. Like, you miss the fact that, Julio Rodriguez, that may be a bad one because everyone knows that he starts slow except mm-hmm. for this year. Julio Machado Rodriguez is a 30-30 player. He's a perennial first rounder, but you kind of forget that, talking about that in December, that people want to drop him in June, but he still gets there. So there's interesting ways to break down and ways to get to final lines. And there's opportunity in that because of the way that the seasons are shaped and the peaks and valleys and just the nature of our silly little game here, where with how different these splits are month over month and half over half.
Well, these first two I've kind of grouped together don't follow that narrative quite as much as like the established guys. And mm-hmm. we do have a handful of those. That's been a spoiler alert that in my home league, I'm really trying to buy the blind faith in the back of the baseball card that some of the established guys will turn it around. But for this pairing, we got Bryce Eldridge and Zach Geloff. Am I saying his name right?
I think it's Geloff.
Geloff. Bryce Eldridge. First of all, this one stings because I drafted and stashed in TGFBI and held and eventually gave up. And I think a week and a half later, he was called up. And, even early on, I don't think he was like on fire, like tearing the cover off the ball. But recently, he has completely turned it around. We knew that he had kind of a slugger profile, but the contact in the hit tool has been a really pleasant surprise for a guy that's just a giant, like 6'7", 21-year-old, and he's hitting .321. And that's coming with 6 home runs, .971 OPS sample size. We're just talking about 33 games. So I think grain of salt, because he's never been a guy that would suggest mm-hmm. a 300 hitter in the minors. So, it's probably an overstatement to say like buy that, we're buying he's a 320 hitter or anything like that. But what's been impressive about Bryce Eldridge is the strikeout rate has dropped. And again, early days, but compared to him being around a 30% strikeout guy throughout the minors, just south of 21% so far, taking walks, solid barrel rate, hits the ball extremely hard. This one seems like the Giants might have enough power to overcome that ballpark. Talk to me about Bryce Eldridge. We'll get to Geloff in a second, but these two guys are like early enough and not a huge track record, and they're showing a breakout. So let's start with Eldridge and get your thoughts on kind of buy, sell, or hold if you're a manager that has Eldridge on the roster.
Yeah, I think this is a buy for me, a buy / hold. Like you said, he's pretty much been scooped up over the last few weeks in all shallow leagues. But it's easy to forget how exciting this guy was as a prospect. Like, he ran, double-digit barrel rates in the minors, had hard hit rates north of 60%. And it was kind of that perfect storm to, like, reduce the hype, right? Like, he didn't make the team out of camp, came up, wasn't like crushing the ball, and didn't have didn't have the surface results to cause like a Fabmageddon and like, run for everyone to pick him up on the wire after like a 2-homer game to start. But it's happening now. After the first 10 games or so, he's really just hit the ball hard consistently, well over 50% over the, on that rolling like 15 game average. The strikeout rate has settled in at 20-ish%, 24%, which is really good for a guy that swings as hard as he does and hits the ball as hard as he does, right? You would expect a little bit more swing and miss there. And honestly, based on the minor league track record of upper 20s, 30s K rates, like, I think there will be regression there. Like, I don't expect him to run a 20% strikeout rate, but hey, we've seen power guys run hot and run low K rates for a decent amount of times. And maybe this could just be that that's the sort of stretch, though. I would expect some sort of adjustment from the league. Like, you know, we saw like mm-hmm. Sal Stewart come up and hit, you know, 10 home runs in a month and then sort of cool off. Like, that's going to happen to an extent. But the question is, what is that sort of floor? And with just how hard he hits the ball, that floor is pretty high. Also, I think that the prospect community and just the hype sort of cooled on him just based on like, just an okay year in AAA in the minors last year. You know, 25 homers is no joke, and 483 plate appearances, 260. But you know, he did have wrist surgery this offseason, so maybe that like suppressed those numbers a little bit, and maybe that also was a reason why he got up to a bit of a slow start here, and didn't make the team out of camp. So, you know, he could be finally feeling healthy. And then just also like on the soft analysis side, like after he hit that walk-off grand slam a few weeks ago, he had like a really cool quote about like how he wanted to be the face of the franchise and, you know, wants to do this and be a household name in San Francisco, which was just a pretty cool and, you know, candid quote from him. And like, you know, just shows, you know, every MLB player wants to be the man and that good of a player and the face of a franchise. Not everyone has the talent to do that. Eldridge, you know, it's probably still a long shot, but I he has the quality contact at least to do it, and it's cool that he comes out and says it. And thought that was an interesting quote, and I would definitely, you know, if he's available in like 10 teamers, like I would add Eldridge for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would be good with adding. I would be good with holding. I don't know that just because, of course, it's a sliding scale. It depends on what you could get for him. But because there's elements of we haven't seen the league adjust yet, and obviously the batting average is pretty inflated, right? Like he's probably profiling out as like a true talent, like 250 to 270, you know, maybe like a Matt Olson type of thing. Yeah. That, you know, if there's kind of a prospect shark in your league or something, like you could, you know, I could argue that there's reason to sell just because of the ballpark, the short track record and everything. But I think overall,
and the potential regression on the strikeout rate, right? Yeah,
exactly. If it does come up to 30%, but I'm with you that I think he's going to be a guy that is drafted in most standard leagues, you know, for years to come. So moving over to Zach Geloff.
Geloff.
I just looked up and they said it rhymes with yellow, but with an F on the end.
Oh.
So I'm like, well, how do you even do that? Geloff.
Geloff? Yeah, Geloff. Right. Well, Geloff. That doesn't rhyme.
Okay.
Geloff. Yeah, Geloff.
It doesn't rhyme with yellow. It's a ridiculous thing.
Yeah. How to pronounce that? Geloff.
That's what this whole podcast is about. Okay. Zach G, our boy, 20 game hit streak. On pace for a 25-20 type of profile here. This one is interesting, Steve. I think a little bit less of a confidence vote for me, but we've seen more from him in terms of the 10 homers, 8 steals, 286 batting average, and he's just been up longer, right? So we're now looking at 208 plate appearances. He's an obvious power speed candidate, which is nice. Like Eldridge, the strikeout rate is kind of concerning, or it's kind of hanging over everything. What concerns me a little bit from what we've seen with him last year is that while the bat speed is up, some of the plate discipline is still just, I guess, concerning. But in 2024, we saw 17 homer, 25 steal season. He's still just 26 years old. I guess this is one that I don't always go after these guys. It's kind of like the Zach Neto thing, where it's like power speed, but a ton of strikeouts. That said, I kind of overlook these guys somewhat. So are you a believer in Geloff, or do you think, I keep saying G with a G. I can't get over it, Steve. Geloff. Or do you think this is a possible sell just given the hot streak he's on?
I mean, do you remember the 2023, that like second half that he had where he had 14 homers, 14 steals, hit .267 with an .840 OPS in 300 plate appearances and 69 games that he came up towards the end of the year in Oakland? Like, there was a decent amount of hype there. There were some red flags, the 27% strikeout rate being one of them, you know, the hard hit rate and max exit velocity maybe not aligning with that much power. And, you know, he was drafted pretty highly in 2024 and, you know, delivered on that power speed, the 17 homers, 25 RBIs, albeit in 247 more plate appearances. And a just horrific .211 average that kind of made him waiver wire fodder, due to that 34% strikeout rate that jumped up. Yeah, there's despite all that, like, there's still an interesting profile here. I know that there's just been debate on Twitter, like, you know, look at the Savant sliders, like, this is the most obvious sell of all time. Like, okay, yeah, maybe it is, but, you know, production is still production, and
sure,
Zach Geloff is producing right now, and providing great power speed. And I know a lot of that came when the A's were, you know, on vacation, not the vacation you went on, but in Las Vegas last year, where there was just, you know, 20 home runs seemingly every night. And Geloff did well there, but it's not like they're going to play their games in Citi Field after this. They're going back to Sacramento, which is still
right,
just you know, almost as hitter friendly as it's basically Vegas without the elevation, right? It's still extremely hitter friendly, and it may be even more so when it gets really, really hot in Sacramento in July and August. So there's still the ballpark advantage that Geloff has there. And, like, there's some things that he's doing well, right? He's not chasing as much. He's not striking out at that 34% clip that made him, you know, untenable in 2024. He's pulling the ball in the air as much as he did, more than he did in 2023. So that'll get the most out of those fly balls that he's hitting. The 8% barrel rate is okay. The 42% hard hit rate is okay. The bat speed is, you know, above average. And he's not chasing, so he should be able to get on base maybe a little bit more, and attack the pitch that he wants to and can do the most damage on. You know, the walk rate isn't great, but it's good speed. He should be able to run a higher BABIP because of that. The ballpark, you know, is worth mentioning it again. There's, I think, an opportunity here if someone just wants to look at those sliders and, you know, scream 291 X WOBA, 224 XBA, sell. Mm-hmm. I think Geloff is I would classify him as a hold.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. And I mean, I think he's been available just because he doesn't have, you know, the kind of name brand value that a lot of the other guys are that are, you know, 286 average, 835 OPS and offering power speed. To the point of the home ballpark, just worth noting that the home away splits, you are looking at home games at 926 OPS, mm-hmm, away 727. So it's there, but he hasn't been completely void of power or speed when playing on the road as well. So I think I'm with you. It's a hold, and it's again kind of a profile that I definitely overlook. And it's a good point that 2023, 2024, it's really just been last year that was, you know, completely truncated, just kind of a lost season with the shoulder injury. So now that we've seen three straight years of it, maybe it does end up being like a 240 to 260 type of hit tool, if like even if there is some regression here, but it's still a pretty useful fantasy player. And the Athletics have been productive across the board, so it's not a bad offense to have exposure to, which we don't always say. So, yeah, that's Eldridge. Between those two, Eldridge and Gayloff, which are you more leaning toward buy and hold?
Oh, Eldridge for me. It is interesting just because Gayloff has, I think, second, third, and outfield eligibility in most places, which is nice.
Yeah. Where's he hitting in the lineup?
Yeah, he hits like fifth, sixth. Okay. Maybe sometimes a little bit further down, down there. But yeah, he has 10 games at second, 37 at third, and 19 in the outfield. So I don't know if he had, I don't think he had outfield eligibility, but that should be coming soon for like NFBC leagues, which is nice. Yeah. So.
Well, and he's kind of, I mean, I guess Eldridge, they've stopped kind of jerking the playing time around. You know what I mean? It's he's pretty much every day.
Yeah, so yeah. Both, they're,
and he's hitting second.
That was another thing with Eldridge, too, right? When he first came up, it's like, you know, he's going to pinch hit versus righties late in the lineup. It's like, all right, well, he like hit his way past that, and the Giants' offense just isn't much to write home about either. So it wasn't like he needed to do much to earn an everyday role, but he did. And I think that was sort of kept the expectations or tampered the excitement a bit when he first started because he wasn't playing every day, and now he's at that point.
Yep. Okay. Well, another two pack we're getting to at opposite ends a little bit of the spectrum youth wise. We got Brian Reynolds and Matt Chapman. This first one, I guess I'm just twisting the knife on myself here, Steve, because last year I was just lamenting the Brian Reynolds down year of his entire career as I invested like a 6-round pick in him. This year, the discount comes in and he looks in a way better than ever. He's got, you know, I dropped in a tweet here by Toby Schulman, but that Reynolds is posting career best right now on walk rate, OBP, slugging percentage, and WRC plus. We're now looking at 10 homers and 5 steals, 280 average, 870 OPS so far. And yeah, I mean, 31 years old, so no spring hen. We've kind of always known Reynolds as kind of the poster boy of oatmeal, like outfielder two type of profile. But it's looking like this could be a season where a lot of things end up as like the high watermark of average and power and speed all together. Like there's a really good shot with the pace that he's on that he ends up putting his best all around fantasy season together. That is the question on if we're buying that or if we feel like this is a sell high moment for Reynolds. Maybe we'll start there before we go to Matt Chapman because stuff to unpack with him as well. But thoughts on Brian Reynolds, Steve?
These ones are so hard, right? Like especially with guys that aren't true like superstars but are really productive players that have like a slow decline or aging. It's easier to jump off the bandwagon, right, with a player like Brian Reynolds than even like I don't know a fading superstar at any point. But like how do you predict a comeback rather than the slow steady decline
right
coming? Like, oh yeah, Brian Reynolds is going to bounce back and have the best year of his career at age 31, or like the best half of his career. It's pretty close to it. That's surprising, but I think this is kind of like a testament to like trust the process. Like under the hood last year, Brian Reynolds was not that bad. A 78th percentile average exit velocity, 10% barrel rate, that's 60th percentile. Hit the ball hard at 46% of the time. You know, bat speed was a little down, right? But nothing like too crazy. You know, improved from 2024 even when he had 24 homers and 10 stolen bases and 791 OPS. So it's not like that was a giant red flag. It is up this year, which is interesting. You wonder if there was like a little bit of bat speed training or something like that. And then last year, it's like the plate discipline was just not there. But you know, maybe that's that plate discipline is kind of like command with a pitcher. Like some years pitchers are feeling it and have this command and are able to dot all year long. Some years hitters, and I don't have like the data to back this up, but some years hitters are just in the zone and know when to swing, not to swing, and have good chase rates, good zone swing rates, and are in the zone. And that's easier to do. Probably, I would assume that's easier to do when you're getting the results. When you're not getting the surface results like Reynolds had last year, you're going to probably have a worse process.
Yes.
So maybe that can come and go a little bit like command, and we sort of.
I like that. Yeah. To me, the inverse, I think, of that same thought is probably true as well. Like we talk about it for pressing, but it's almost like it's easier for the outlier to go from bad to really bad than you to be in like a rhythm of plate discipline. I feel like it's more the frustration, right? Of if the surface results aren't there and you start striking out a little bit, then what are you doing in the next few weeks, like kind of pressing to get out of the slump? And sometimes it just lasts too long. But I feel like it is a good point with guys kind of structured career-wise like Reynolds. I mean, Ian Happ comes to mind, like these guys that are just steady Eddie, you know what you get, to not overreact to one of those kind of unexplainable down years. So yeah, I guess to the question of the show, Steve, is this just a straight hold because that's kind of the boring expected one, or would you be in a hurry to pursue or to deal Brian
Reynolds? I would be holding Brian Reynolds. Honestly, okay. I would even buy him. Like he's a good, I think a good he's kind of found money in a way, right? Like he was not nearly as costly as he was in prior years after that down year. So the team that has him probably has an excess of outfielders and may be gettable.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so the next one we are jumping to is Mr. Matt Chapman, who another one out in San Francisco, and one that was off to a cold start. Well, mainly a brutal May with just a 186 batting average. Dropped in a handful of leagues. I think the roster percent is still above 80, but some shallower leagues might still be available until he went off in the last few weeks. The last 30 days, 6 homers, a .322 average, .1007 OPS. And this one was interesting to me, Steve, like breaking it down a little bit, is even the April, which looked pretty good, didn't have the power output that he's had in the past month. And if you look at kind of his month over month charts, his bat speed has gone up pretty significantly from April, where it was south of, or it was like 75.5, has gone up almost a full tick from April to June. And during that same time frame, his strikeout rate has dropped from 23%, give or take, down to under 15%. So to me, Chapman just swinging the bat faster, hitting the ball harder, and striking out less. So you don't want to overreact to such a small sample size. I think Chapman kind of follows the same talk track that we just had with Reynolds, that you kind of don't get too high or low with a Matt Chapman. You kind of just sign up for that, like 240, 250, 20 plus homers, good on base skills relative to the average. But I think the arrow's kind of pointing up fast for him, and I'm buying the stuff under the hood for it. So curious your thoughts for the 33-year-old, if you think he can actually put together a pretty nice year. Because with all things said, his batting average right now is at .257 on the season. And to the last time he hit that high, you have to go all the way back to 2018. So we might see a high watermark here for Matt Chapman, and maybe the power is coming along too.
Yeah. Chapman's kind of been like the poster boy for underperforming like quality contracts, contact and savant metrics, right? His StatCast page is always bright red. And it's always like, you know, he's a 25 homer, 240, 230 hitter. Like, it's not too exciting. At first glance, it's like, whoa, like, he is not hitting the ball that hard. His barrel rate is way down. Yeah, his bat speed is still good, but that's about it. But like you said, if you look at like the rolling samples, that is completely changed and just being dragged down by,
terrible
April
May.
And May, just quality of contact wise. So, my initial thought was like, all right, don't buy this, sell. Like, but I think that, you know, there's maybe a path here to a similar season to 2024 when he had 27 homers, hit 247, you know, got on base at a decent clip and slugged 463, and was a valuable fantasy asset. So I'm inclined to sort of, I don't want this show to just be, you know, buy everybody here, but I think there is an opportunity, and at least it's a hold or an add, in places, just because the quality contact has improved dramatically. The bat speed is really good. It could just be him finding a groove. And I think that there is, an interesting player here in matchup. And I think there's some trade talk too, right? I know that for righties, San Francisco is not as bad of a place to hit. But you know, it's still like, you know, a colder place than normal, even in the summer. If you get traded to a better lineup, that could be good. So there could be even more opportunity there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. I agree. I think, cause we'll about to take our break. We'll talk about, some struggling hitters, but of these, I think Reynolds doesn't feel that actionable. I think there's a huge opportunity to kind of buy Chapman just because overall it's been frustrating. I mean, tonight he went 0-for-5. So it's like, are you buying, or, you know, it's a shorter leash, right, on managers being frustrated with him. And then I think both Gayloff and Eldridge are in a similar, like, hold or buy. Like we kind of believe it for what you expect from it. So yeah, maybe some of these names we're going to get to that are struggling hitters will give us more reasons to sell or not be looking to buy, but you know, it's nothing wrong with giving good advice too. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes, but we're going to take our first ad break and we'll be right back after this. All right. So Steve, this is the thrift store that I've been shopping at, and it's kind of surprising, honestly, because there's some name brand stuff here. This is like seeing like the Travis Matthew polo at like a Goodwill or something, like between George Springer, Jackson Merrill. Like somehow my waiver wire has gotten some pretty high rostered guys on there, but Springer to a less extent. I think last year, We're documenting on the show, me especially, really buying what he did last year between the narrative, the underlying numbers. I know all off season we were super pumped about just the price with Springer, that like the industry didn't have him all the way up at like pick 50 or anything. But everything that we loved about last year, where the bat speed was up and he was talking about his A swing, this year the bat speed's down. Everything is down. The, you know, quality of contact, the plate discipline is, it's held a little bit, and he's always been good with that. But yeah, the 212 batting average, 677 OPS. That said, April May was a sub 350 slug, and he is heating up a little bit. The past week, couple homers, 353 average, 1226 OPS. So signs of life, at least for Springer, for what's been a struggling Blue Jays offense in general. And I was trying to just kind of dig to see if there's anything. I know June, it's, you know, just over halfway through the month. One thing that was kind of discouraging is the bat speed is down. It's still down. April, it was higher than May and June, but the swing length has dropped quite a bit in the month of June. So, you know, looking at the all the Kyle Bland stuff about like it's actually acceleration. You want a smaller swing, faster swing. So it's not faster, but it is a shorter swing. And at least he's trying something different that might line up with a narrative. He does have 7 homers, so it's not nothing. We're not going to get the season we had last year. But what do you think on on Springer. Would you, if he has another hot week or two, would you be looking to sell to, because that would be kind of a miniature sell high, or do you think you're going down with the ship because he could turn into a version of what he did last year?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the power speed in the 230 plate appearances isn't that bad with seven homers and six steals. You wonder, there was an injury in mid-April. He did foul ball with his toe and fracture a toe. Like, and that sort of a thing. It's like, all right, you kind of play like I don't know if you've broken a toe before. Like, you can't like do anything about it. Like, and I would imagine he just plays through it. You know, that whole famous narrative from last year is that he decided to just take his A swing more often. That doesn't look to be the case, right? Like, because you saw the bat speed increase, you know, so much last year. And now he's kind of back in line with the 2024 version of himself, in 2023 even, which isn't great. But I also think that, hey, there still could be a guy that could pace for like a 10-10 half with, you know, he should do better than a 212, 220 batting average. That being said, like, yeah, I guess, you know, it is 36. There are some nagging injuries. If there is a bit of a hot streak, like, it's not like, okay, I buy this bat speed and you know, this underlying quality of contact makes me think that he's a jump straight by. I would think that he is more towards a sell if this hot streak does continue.
I think I can get on board with that. And he's one that I added because it was like, why not? And I wasn't inspired by the wire or anything. But I think if we're being true to the process, everything we were so excited about last year, that you're absolutely right that what he's doing this season looks a lot more like 2024. You know, 2023, like, there might be stretches where that's usable, but it's not the guy that you were really hoping for. And we knew there would be regression, right? Like, he wasn't priced to hit 309 with 1,000 OPS, but I think we were hoping for 265, 25, 30 homers. Eventually the speed has to drop off, right? I mean,
yeah,
I know he's not slow, but he's going on 37. But if it looks more like it did, you know, when it was like a 230 hitter that's flirting with 2020, that to me is a little fringy, especially when the lineup isn't helping around him. So I would agree. The ones we talked with, this feels more like a flash in the pan, unless I'll be watching. The toe injury is a good call, Steve, to see if because it is kind of strange that your bat speed after being so high last year would just fall off a cliff after the first month of the season. Like, it seems like something else is going on there. So the next one I think is much more compelling, and it's probably at this point a tough trade target. I was because people have suffered for so long with Jackson Merrill. And as we speak tonight on Wednesday, he went 3-for-5 with a homer and a steal. He's got 4 multi-hit games in the last 8 games. And it's Jackson Merrill, right? Like, you were huge on him all offseason, Steve. I think he might have been either a bold prediction or a chalkboard. Like, he's a massive name value that was frustrating to a point where I picked him up off the waiver wire. But for people who would have to target him in a trade, now you're looking at prying him away from a manager when he was hot. I guess the question just becomes for game theory, do you believe that Jackson Merrill is able to return to being like a, you know, first 6-round, 7-round pick where he goes like 80 overall by the end of the season? Because he was slipping after these first couple months for sure.
I traded or dropped Jackson Merrill wherever I had him, at least in 12 team leagues. So, yeah, and really until like the last week, haven't really looked back. Of course, in my home league, I'm facing him this week. So, yeah,
there it is. That means next week he's gonna bottom out.
And having, you know, a great week, but facing the only team that's having a better week. So that just is how my year is going. But yeah, like just to break down Merrill a bit, like, the quality of contacts looks better, and the bat speeds up from intra-month, like you've been saying. But the reason why I was so intrigued and high on Jackson Merrill in the offseason was because of the fact that he had an injury riddled 2025, which, you know, my logic was, okay, that prevented him from showcasing his elite quality contact or really strong quality contact with strong plate skills and low strikeout rate. Add in the speed and then the ability to hit for a good amount of power. There's your, you know, top three round fantasy player. The quality contact has come to fruition, but the plate discipline has not. And that's really holding him back. Like, if he's going to strike out 24% of the time, only walk 8% of the time, chase pitches, and have, you know, good but not great quality contact, like, that's going to be a good fantasy player. It's not going to be a great one. Maybe that just needs to be my expectations sort of just readjusted to a guy that could hit 260, 270, chip in 15 to 18 homers, 20 homers in a good year, and steal 25 bases. Like, that's, a solid player, but not the star that I maybe envisioned. That being said, like, you know, he's not been that so far this year, and maybe still has the chance to be. So maybe there's a bit of a buying opportunity there, especially if he's been dropped. Yeah.
Yeah. It's squinting a little bit, but the strikeout rate in June is 20%, where it was like 25% in April and May. It's good that he's running, because last year with the weird year and injury riddled was just the one steal. I thought I remembered that we were waiting for him to steal some bases early on this season, but I mean, at least he's back to running, because while he'd have to hit 300 the rest of the way to even get his average up to like 270, like you're talking about, Steve, I do think that the 8 homers, 12 steals is not the worst spot, right? Of like, you know, if you double that.
Yeah. That's point. Kind of what I expected. Yeah. It's just the average isn't there. And particularly because of the strikeout rate, the 5 category contributor ceiling is capped.
So are you at a hold then? Because now, like, if you were a manager, like, all things equal, who just had stuck it out with Merrill and he's on your roster, what are you doing with this hot stretch? Are you trying to deal? Are you just holding on to him? It sounds like you're not pursuing him in like a trade. And
no, but I would hold. Like, I think there's still a usable player here.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, obviously I got the rose tinted glasses cause I just picked them up, but I'm intrigued by the bat speed and the, like you said, the quality of contact stuff.
Yeah, I want to look at like his rolling strikeout rate. Let me pull that up.
Look that up. In the meantime, what I was going to say is I just wouldn't be shocked at all if in the off season this year, we're saying, oh, Jackson Merrill, if you look at his second half, he really came alive, because every year it seems like, you know, you look at 5 players and 3 of them have drastic splits of first half, second half. So I think Merrill could be one of those guys. And obviously just at 23 years old, like, there's a lot of talent in the profile.
Yes. So there's been a decent, it's pretty funny that the strikeout rate really mirrors the WOBA. Jackson Merrill did get off to a hot start this year, like through the first 20 or so games, and basically every valley with strikeout rate like is a peak for WOBA, and every peak for strikeout rate is a valley with WOBA, and he's kind of, you know, he's reversed that trend, at least in the last, you know, 15 games or so, keeping that strikeout rate. It's not, you know, the elite 15-17% that I dreamed on, but it's around 20% over the last few weeks. So encouraging there.
A little bit better. Yeah. Okay. Well, that is Merrill. Let's shift to pitchers. But before we do that, we're going to take our second ad break, and we'll be right back after this. Okay. So, Steve, running a little long. I don't know. I know we had Dylan Cruz dropped in as well. Just a quick note. I mean, this was Frank Stanfill's shout that, you know, as rough as it looks for Dylan Cruz, he's hitting 189 with a 567 OPS. His underlying stuff looks as promising as it has maybe ever for Dylan Cruz. So better strikeout rate, better hard hit rate. So just he is one that would be available to add. Any interest in Cruz? I know a lot of my home league threads are, you know, not huge on the guy because he's burnt pretty much every manager. But do you think there's still a chance for a breakout there quick before we get to pitchers?
I mean, it's easy to forget. You know, he's just 24 years old, former second overall pick, like tore up college, you know, did get sent down and work on some things. I know that's usually viewed as a negative, but it's come up and you know, the surface numbers aren't there, but you know, the underlying numbers are the best they've been. So interested to see how that plays out, right? Especially if you have a guy that could barrel the ball 10%, strike out at just 18% of the time, has good bat speed, good average exit velocity. That is exciting, and it's easy to get excited about. So, interested, I guess.
Yeah,
no, that's not a category for us to choose from, but interesting.
I like it. Yeah, just he's heating up a little bit. Past 10 games, couple homers, only 3 strikeouts. So, yeah, it's a watch lister. All right, pitcher Steve, and I know we're running a little long, but we'll group the hot pitchers first. So we got Reed Detmers, Dustin May, and Bryce Miller. You know, I'm inclined to look at how fantastic Dustin May has been. Again, it's one that love to see it for the Cardinals, looking like a possible playoff team. But for Dustin May, I feel like you and I have been in and out so many times, and I am missing out on this kind of renaissance where we're finally starting to see things click, right, with the strikeouts mainly. And it's just been pretty impressive, the pitch mix change, the increased cutter usage, and, yeah, game logging him. It's like, what, Dustin May has multiple 9 strikeout games? Like, that, we just haven't seen that. And it's been a long time where he's been an exciting pitcher, but he's kind of always underwhelmed us. Then you've got Reed Detmers and Bryce Miller. So I'll let you take kind of dealer's choice on adding to Dustin May, or if we want to jump in and talk about Detmers and Bryce Miller. All these guys are super intriguing, and definitely point to buy with what they've been doing. But what are your thoughts here?
Yeah. I am pretty. Let's start with Dustin May.
Okay.
Where do you think Dustin May is on the Fangraphs player rater for last 30 days for pitchers?
I think that I've cheated because I was just looking at how hot the Cardinals' first 4 are. Is he like a top 10 player right now in the past 30?
For pitchers, he's 7th. Right in front of Reed Detmers, who we'll talk about next, and behind the other person we'll talk about, Bryce Miller, who's 3rd. Wow. Yeah, Dustin May looks kind of like what he did during that stretch before he got hurt with the Dodgers in like 2022, right? 2023, where it looked like, you know, Dustin May was a huge prospect and like potentially like number one, number two, like real life pitcher hype. You know, you saw this redheaded guy who threw 99 with sinkers that moved 14 inches of arm side run, you know, just crazy pitching ninja stuff, and has just been through it all with so many injuries and coming back and not looking great. And if you remember, I think we talked about him a bit in the offseason, just because I think he came up in our SB Sleeper episode, just because the velocity was back, right? And the velocity is back. He's holding 97. He was throwing 97 in the ninth inning during his complete game on Tuesday night. That's up from 95.5 last year. That's a big deal. And Lance Brzdowski did a great write-up on him today. And a lot of the success has come from just him being better versus lefties. He's increased that cutter usage, and he's like an exciting point was there's room for improvement versus lefties, Lance thinks, because he thinks he could throw the sweeper more because it acts more of a curveball, so it could be more platoon neutral. The sweeper gets a ton of swing and miss. It's one of those giftable pitches that Dustin May has. And it's just sort of another thing, and like it's taken him a while, and he's reaching his potential a bit. Pitchers are so tough because it's like you could have a rule of thumb. It's like, all right, if you sell all of these non-Paul Skeens, you know, Cam Slitler, ace-type pitchers at their high point, you're probably going to do right well. But also, like, there's credence to holding them and just finding the next guy who's has a similar skill set to Dustin May that's on a hot streak towards the end of the year. So, you know, you don't want to kick yourself too much. You don't want to just scream sell on all of these guys because I think it could be easy to do that. But Dustin May has made some legitimate changes and improvements under the hood that have me excited.
Yeah, it is. It's wild, like, looking at his game over game pitch mix, because I mean he's got a pretty deep repertoire with the four seamer, the cutter, the sweeper, the sinker, the change, the curve he throws in there. And if you look, even like May 27th was one of those nine strikeout outings, his pitch usage looks wildly different from that to his most recent outing. And I don't really know what to make of that. Like, I almost like to see easy things to point to on major breakouts. But I guess the flip side of the coin is that he's got a lot of weapons and the velocity is holding regardless, like you're saying, Steve. So, yeah. And I mean, the Cardinals, great defense behind him, good ballpark environment, decent division coming down the stretch. So yeah, like Dustin May here. I think it's a hold. I think that's fair, yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, I don't know. You would have to pay a pretty penny to pry him away from somebody that's riding the wave right now. And I don't know that it's, like you said, I mean, maybe if you, depending on where you sold, how high you sold high, it probably won't look like this the rest of the way just because of the track record. But you could say that about most of these guys, right? So mm-hmm. I think probably a hold. Talk to me about Reed Detmers, Steve. One that feels almost like a pitcher version of like Jordan Walker or something. Like, how many times have we been in and out? And or maybe another one is Nick Pivetta. It's like, it's just like, is he actually finally doing it? Because we now have 88 innings, 100 strikeouts, 3.68 ERA, and a one whip, but what he's done recently is even more impressive than that, where right now he looks like he's like an out and out like SP2. What are your thoughts on what Detmers is doing and if it's sustainable? My gut says to sell, because that's just the Detmers that he's built us up to let us down in the past. But talk me out of that if you think that you're actually buying this.
Yeah, it's exciting. Like, I've always been in a Reed Detmers fan. Like, the stuff, the slider, so good. The fastball, great. The peripherals and underlying numbers, yes, this should be a good pitcher, right? Like, he's had, you know, FIPs and XFIPs, numerous runs below his actual ERA for several years, right? Got so bad 2024, was demoted to the bullpen. But I remember last year at 2025, like, when he became like a multi inning guy and looked good out of the bullpen. Just like making a mental note to remember when Reed Detmers makes the rotation next year and is converted back to a starter, because that was always the plan. just with how sort of good and matured he looked as a pitcher, and that's sort of coming to fruition. Yeah, there's some concerns and overperformance, right? We're used to Reed Detmers underperforming those expected stats. There's definitely some overperformance now. Nick is talking about and how the last few starts, despite the amazing results, how the slider hasn't been as dotted. He hasn't gotten as many swings and misses on it. It's finding too much of the zone. But like part of being able to become a usable and reliable starter, not only in fantasy, but in real life, is learning how to deal with those outings, those stretches where you're not getting swing and miss, where you're not dotting the slider low and away. And obviously Detmers was not able to do that. Like Detmers was the king of blow up starts, right? Like the 2/3 of an inning, 8 strikeouts, 4 walks, like blow up starts. I know that that's happened at a few points even this year. But
eight runs against the Athletics. Yeah, that's a high
but
point.
He looks like a different pitcher, like mentally, over these last few starts, which, you know, I know we can't put a number on that. And there is some susceptibility here because he is kind of, he's mostly just a 2-pitch pitcher, right? Like it's, to lefties, he's 44% fastball, 39% slider. He throws 2 pitches. Yeah, he mixes in a changeup and a curve a little bit to righties, but he's still mostly those 2 pitches. That does make it a bit worrisome. But those pitches are really, really good. He's just 26 years old. Like, right, that's a crazy, crazy number there. For Detmers, and I think there's a maturation of him as a pitcher as well as the stuff, but I would obviously expect a little bit of regression. Like I would peg him for a mid to high 3 ERA with over a strikeout an inning the rest of the way, which is usable.
It's encouraging that his most recent outing yesterday, no walks. Yeah. Like
the walk rate overall is encouraging, just 6.8% on the season.
Yeah, 9.4% last year. So that's important because for a guy that gets hit pretty hard and, like you said, has those blow-ups, like you don't want to be giving out those free passes, right? I still just and you bring up good points all around. Like I wouldn't be shocked, but of the ones because of the shallow arsenal and because it's a good fastball from like a results standpoint, but I have a hard time that it's, not great extension, 94 miles per hour, not like insane movement. He does get some pretty good whiffs on it as fastballs go. And it's definitely been effective this year, but like just trying to kind of future cast. I feel like I might sell if the price was right. Like,
his next two starts are versus the Athletics, one in Sacramento, one at home, the team that he gave up 8 runs to. He did have 8 strikeouts and 2 walks in that game, though, so, and didn't give up a homer. So,
yeah, okay. Well, let's talk about Bryce Miller quick, Steve. Mm-hmm. So fastball velocity, it's another guy that's just kind of relied on having that great fastball, and the fastball velocity is back, and everything looks really good for Bryce Miller. Granted, we've now just seen, 5 starts, but he's looked very good. Over strikeout an inning, 1.54 ERA, a 0.71 whip. Thoughts here on Bryce Miller? Like, to me, this is a guy that's demonstrated and given us like a full season of Miller being like an out-and-out SP2-3 in that range. So I would be willing to say, give me Bryce Miller over Reed Detmers. What are your thoughts on Bryce Miller? Are you buying, and how would you kind of stack him up next to Dustin May and Reed Detmers?
Yeah, I think he is a notch above both those guys, right? Everything we liked about Bryce Miller is essentially back and better than ever. The velo, the swing strike rate, the location, like he's a guy that has this amazing fastball he's able to put anywhere he wants. and kind of was a good pitcher just because of that. But now he has like this kitchen sink approach. You know, it's amazing. It's still really high percentage fastball to both lefties and righties, but he throws the splitter 26% of the time to lefties, which gets a lot of swing and miss, and a slider as well, 80% of the time. So it's three pitch mix to lefties. And then versus righties, it's the splitter and then a bunch of different pitches, like 5 to 15% of the time. So you really don't know like what's coming. He's added, essentially a bunch of pitches where he's kind of like supplementing that. In a way, he's like a one pitch pitcher and how good the fastball is. But so the splitter, yeah. And then, a slider 11% of the time, a cutter 10% of the time, a sweeper, and a curve. All the righties and just able to, mix and match. And it's really unlocked things. Like Bryce Miller, I think, could be kind of like a guy that goes in that starting pitcher 100 ADP next year. And that could provide like sort of, 1A return value, yeah, with how he's going and how good he's been.
I think so. I think another plus for Miller is there's some volume concerns like coming in, but with him having an injury to start the season, now it's like you've kind of already banked.
It's like you can go the rest of the way. Yeah, that's nice.
Totally. So, yeah, I'm kind of real quick, just want to peek at, his last outing, they let him go for 8.
Yeah.
And then before that, 6. So, yeah, he's working up already from those first handful of starts where he only went 5 or 5 and change. So, yeah, I think Bryce Miller, man, if you were one that held on and had Bryce, he's one I think would be a great target if anybody is willing to sell high. So, yeah, like that one. Moving to the strugglers, Steve, and curious with this batch, it's such an obvious thing of like, okay, would you deal any of the ones we just talked about for any of the ones that are struggling a little bit? But we got Kyle Bradish, who's probably got the least to get excited about. I mean, you invested, a pick 80 or something, and he just has looked absolutely awful. It's like you're searching for any signs of life with just pretty much everything going backwards. He's getting hit so hard, giving up home runs, things that were bankable for him in the past, those pitches have just not been producing like they have with swing and miss stuff. So Bradish is a question mark. Let's start with him. Do you think there's any signs of life here? I know some people are just straight up saying like, is it time to drop? And it's tough to kind of argue away from that when he looks like pretty much just a guy and somebody that you would not miss to go add like a Gage jump or whoever the shiny toy is. So talk to me about your thoughts for Kyle Bradish. Any signs of life here?
Is 7 Ks and 1 walk and 4 innings tonight a sign of life versus the Mariners? There's been flashes. There's been flashes of that for sure. That being said, like, it still hasn't looked great. Like, the curveball and slider have just not been like in full sync based on, a few of Nick's write-ups over the last few days, right? He needs those pitches to be elite at the same time, and they haven't been. So it's been frustrating. The swing strike rate is down. The walk rate is up. Home run trouble, giving up hard contact. There's not a lot to inspire confidence here. That being said, like, to use one of Nick's terms, I think he still is a turning around, a Tiara guy, a turning around right away guy, and can potentially go on runs. And I could see him having a second half without really having much of that to base that on other than just the track record and Kyle Bradish and who he's been and how good he looked at the end of last year coming back from Tommy John. There were some, like, I don't know how substantiated it is, I don't know the source, but there were some just like reports out of Baltimore about the Orioles wanting him to pitch through injury and things like that. So that's a little bit concerning, but honestly, like, this is kind of like a blind buy to me, just based on the name brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and probably one of his best couple starts of the season so far tonight.
Yeah, it's still in the fourth inning. When he gets pulled.
Yeah.
A lot can change, but yeah.
For sure. But I think that is a sign of life. So totally valid. Let's go to Jared Jones next. You know, this was one that it's like, up and down and up and down, and he's at the Dodgers and survives, and you get excited, and then he gets roughed up in the very next outing. Again, that was at the Athletics, so it's like, do you write that off, where he gave up 2 homers, 5 earned?
Yeah, was that in
It was, yeah, that was in Sacramento. Yeah.
Or was that Vegas, even worse?
I thought it was Sacramento. Okay.
Was it last week or the week before?
This was yesterday.
Okay, so that is Sacramento. That is Sacramento. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so not Vegas. But, yeah. I mean, still, I guess that makes it even worse, but the
it's still not good, Jared Jones, like we were saying. Yeah, it's still not. You're not somewhat. You still get a pass for having to pitch in a Triple A ballpark in Sacramento. Yeah.
Yeah, but for Jared Jones, I mean, his velocity is up from where it was in 2024 when we were so excited about him. His swing and miss stuff still looks good. I think the walk rate looks similar to back then. So I think kind of the lazy analysis is just like, hold, this looks a lot like the same guy, and maybe he's just working out kinks. Would you be actively trying to buy if somebody kind of waited and then is obviously pretty underwhelmed by what we've gotten from Jared Jones? It feels like we have yet to have that lights out start that, you know, in 2024, if you go back, he had 4 or 5 games where it was like 9 strikeouts or more. We have not seen that yet. Do you think it's coming? Because there could be a buy window here.
I think it's a little bit of a cautionary tale. You know, Jones, at least to righties, is a true 2-pitch pitcher, 38% fastball, 43% slider. Mixes in the changeup and curve a bit more versus lefties. And Jones was so intriguing, and I loved him so much as a prospect in that year that he had, was because his fastball was just so, so good that it was just like right. It was a fastball that was right down the middle, and he just dared hitters to hit it, and he couldn't do that. I know that, you know, a lot of the metrics and the numbers, the velocity looks similar to what it was in 2024. The ride is down a tick. Which is, you know, a little bit concerning. And I think it's just a bit of a cautionary tale. It's like, even though those things all look, you know, the same, it still may take a little bit more, of fine tuning coming back from TJ, especially for a guy that's like, here's my fastball, hit it, and then a slider. And like, Jones did have a bit of a home run problem in 2024, and it was, quote unquote, just a 26% strikeout rate. It wasn't like the 31, 32 of the elites. And I think that's sort of, you know, that height isn't reached just because it is such a 2-pitch mix. If he is able to add something else, then I think maybe he could make that jump. And despite the swing strike rate being in line at 14%, it's still just a 23% strikeout rate this year. With that bit of a home run issue that has been a bugaboo so far, it's 2.08 homers per 9 so far in the 17 innings. Small sample, understood. Game in Sacramento, understood. I think there just may be a bit more growing pains with Jared Jones. That being said, next year I will be fully in on this.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. So would you be in the sell camp?
I think so. Yeah. I think this may be a sell for me. Yeah.
Okay. We will wrap up with Parker Messick, who has not been a sell for you this season, Steve, but it's been a rough June for Messick. It's just kind of the first couple of speed bumps, and every pitcher goes through them. But it's worth noting that for a guy that we, you know, thought was like marching his way toward Rookie of the Year, has had a couple of blow-ups here, or not blow-ups, but just rough starts in comparison. The walks are up, the strikeouts are down in June. I know he doesn't have kind of the conventional underlying stuff like swing and miss, everything that we've seen from other guys. He's kind of like a stump the metrics type of build and lefty. Are you concerned at all, or do you think that this would be a buying opportunity if anybody is concerned with the last two starts, which, to be fair, one was against the Yankees, four homers allowed, four earned runs allowed, and then the Guardians before that was three earned and five and change. So not necessarily like struggles, but just kind of coming back down to reality a little bit for Parker Messick.
Yeah, I think this is just like typical regression. He was so good in April and May, a 1.73 ERA in April, a 2.73 ERA in May, 5.56 in June. It's only 11 pitches. The strikeout rate is way down. Walks are way up. He hasn't gone six innings since May 13th. There are a few 5 2/3 in there, so take that with a grain of salt. But yeah, like this is a guy that's funk that the league has now seen a few times, and there's a book on. So I think there is it's just the typical regression. Like, right, I would sort of lean on what his projections are the rest of the way, which is, Oopsie has him at a 3.95 ERA, with, you know, a little under a strikeout per inning. I would probably lean towards mid to high threes ERA. Maybe that's a bit much.
That's a lot of regression.
Yeah, a lot, but
sub three last year, sub three this year.
Yeah, that's still a good pitcher though. And would end up with what, like for a season line, like a 3.50 ERA? Like that's still good year. And honestly, maybe put a little bit more into the strikeout rate, give him a strikeout per inning, which is a very usable SP 2.5, 3. So I would be a hold, a buy if people are like panicking, looking to get rid of him. Like if you need to trade for like a hitter or something, you need to give up a really good pitcher, like I would try and do like, you know, an ace for a hitter and like, okay, I'll give you a back end starter if you give me Messick or something like that, just because guys may be a bit frustrated there. I like doing that in trades.
Yeah. No, I like it. I like it. So that was kind of buy hold for Messick, sell for Jared Jones from Steve. I'm holding out hope there just because it's early. And then Bradish, I think, is a little bit of the blind buy, especially buoyed with what we saw tonight. That wraps us up for pitchers and for the show. Ran a little long, but great to be back. We will be back next week. And until then, thank you guys for tuning in. Thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys.